WAIF as a community radio station serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. They reflect Chris and Rob's views or the views of their guests. Thank you for listening to WAIF Cincinnati. And now, grinding sacred cows into Radio Hamburger, here's your hosts, the two and only Chris and Rob, starring in the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. To be on tonight's program, call now, 749-1444. Or if you're calling from outside the 275 loop, put a 513 before it and call 513-749-1444. Make sure to check out Chris and Rob on the internet at CincinnatiAtlas.com. And now, finally, here's Chris and Rob.
Before we get into the less serious nature of tonight's show, let me mention to you that in the last 2 days, 16 young American men have died in Iraq in the Battle of Fallujah. And I want every single one of you who voted for George Bush to remember that you have blood on your damn hands. My goodness gracious, it's that time again. There's Greenwich the Mean Time Dog.
Take a bite out of time.
Telling us it's 10:13 Tuesday evening. It must be Chris and Rob on WAIF. Now, Chris.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
Rah!
Now, we share this planet with so many of God's wonderful creatures.
We share like kitty cats?
Kitty cats.
Puppy dogs.
Puppy dogs. Snails.
Tigers,
cardinals,
snakes,
tigers,
snakes,
lions,
snakes,
snakes,
Republicans,
Republicans, bears,
Bill Maher,
fish, ostriches, llamas,
all three kinds of llamas,
one hump llama,
a one L llama, a 2L llama, and 3L llamas.
All those beautiful creatures that God made, and God doesn't make any junk, if you ask me. There are mountains, there are plants, that give us life. There are big giant whales that live in the ocean. There are 40-ton blue whales that eat the smallest little pieces of shrimp and eat plankton. And the plankton creates oxygen.
Do they eat the shrimp with some of
life.
That cocktail sauce? I got the little cocktail sauce with the shrimp.
They get it off the buffet.
Get them deep-fried?
They get it deveined, They like them deveined.
I like them
deveined. That's why they got the ball in it. That's why they got the stuff in their mouth so they can devein the shrimp.
Right.
The cocktail sauce and the ice cubes. There are all kinds of wonderful creatures on God's planet. There are birds that can fly for 100 miles without flapping their wings. There are buzzards who'll eat dead stuff off the road. There are woolly worms who get real fuzzy when it's going to be a cold winter.
They have a festival for them down in Kentucky in Beattyville. They have the Beattyville Woolly Worm Festival.
There are mules. They can't have any baby mules, but still somehow we have mules.
That's a cruel trick that man played on God, making them damn mules.
And there are dogs that scooch across the carpet. There are cats that will walk across you while you're sleeping. There are birds that'll sing outside your window and wake you up each and every morning.
Are you getting at what I think you're getting at?
I'm saying that we, Homo sapiens, share this planet with wonderful, wonderful creatures, and we're very blessed by God that He populated the earth with so many beautiful, wonderful creatures. And we know about a lot of these. We send scientists, is what we call them. We send scientists and biologists and botanists out into the field, out into the wilderness.
Don't forget about entomologists.
And entomologists.
They study bugs.
There are
paleontologists. They work on dinosaurs.
There are waspers that will lay their eggs on the back of a spider and then sting the spider so the spider's paralyzed. And then when the little baby spiders are hatched, they can just start eating
little
the
baby
spider.
Wasps.
Yeah, when little baby waspers are hatched, they can eat the spider.
They eat the spider all up.
That's wonderful. That's a miracle. That's a miracle right there, people. And we share this plant. There are bugs. There are little brown recluses. And you'll look at the teeth on a brown recluse and you'll say, oh, those cute little fangs can't even penetrate my human-like skin. And next thing you know, the doctor's removing a finger. Because you got brown recluse venom in you. There are scorpions in the desert that if they're in your shoe, you'll die. There are spinning cobras. They can spit all over your binoculars. There are snakes who stay warm in the engine of your car.
There are big, giant, fat polar bears who love to play with orange plastic pumpkins at the zoo and have their picture emailed back and forth to all their friends. There are plants that will eat flies. There are flies who will eat poop. It's all part of nature. Therefore, there are poop-eating plants. It's the chain of life, and it's wonderful, and it's a miracle. There are little babies. You know what a mighty oak tree is at one point, Chris?
A little sapling.
It's a little acorn.
Yeah.
At some point, it's a little acorn, and there is a squirrel, and he's out gathering nuts for winter, and somehow he gets a little too excited, and when it's time for him to remember where he buried all his acorns, he can't remember because he's got a little squirrel brain. And the next thing you know, you got a big old oak tree growing up there in the woods.
Well, not the next thing, you know. It takes a couple hundred years.
Well, it takes a little while, but then you got a big old oak tree growing up because there's some squirrel too dumb to remember where he buried his nuts.
And then you got some liberal tiny yellow ribbon around it.
And then you got squirrels who drive trucks full of cereal. You got lizards selling beer. It's a wonderful, wonderful country, and the world is full of beautiful things.
You got ducks selling insurance to Yogi Berra.
And you got tigers selling sugary cereal. And it's all great, and we're all part of this, and we all have our own little niche.
And you got
on
the king of dongs selling pastries.
The king of dongs.
Yeah, you know, king.
The king of dongs. The king of dongs. The king of dongs. And he rules his kingdom with an ironclad hard fist.
But
the king of dongs.
And that's why they call him King Dongs.
He's King Dong.
Yeah, the King Dong. You can get him up at the carry-out.
Yeah, he's the king of dongs.
They're right there next to the Twinkies and the Ho-Ho's. And the king of dongs.
And Fruit Pie the Magician and Apple Pie the Cowboy. No, but the king of dongs. I never heard of the king of dongs referred to as the king of dongs. But if there is a kingdom of dongs, we're very lucky to share it with the planet, with the king of dongs and his son, the prince of dongs, and his daughter, the princess of dongs. Of course,
no, they call her Lady Dong.
Lady Dong?
Yeah.
There's dongs in waiting.
Good
there are
God
flamingos.
Almighty. What are we getting at here? What are we getting at? What's all this, all God's green precious earth all about? What are you getting at? What's the bottom line here, Robert?
There are flamingos that are pink and they stand around on one leg.
So?
There are penguins that wear little tuxedos and slide on the ice much to the delight of everyone.
So?
There are gorillas that have silver on their back and they run through the woods and they throw gas cans at each other to scare the crap out of everyone around.
Right. And what's your point here, Big Shot?
There are monkeys in the world. If you stick their head through a table and eat their brains while they're still alive, it's delicious and nutritious.
Some people do that.
I know they do.
Some really warped, demented people do that.
There are mandrels that'll rip your arm off and beat you with the wet end and laugh while doing it. There are all kinds of great animals on this planet. There are sharks bigger than Cadillacs. There are eels. There are barracudas in the water. There are manta rays. There are teeny tiny little teeny tiny fish that you won't even see. And then there's big giant fish. There are teeny tiny little foxes that are real small. Then there are these big giant wolves that are real big.
And your point is?
We know about a lot of these animals. We know about the kangaroo rat.
Oh, yeah.
We know about the slowed loris. We know about the ruffed lemur. We know about that orange tamarins thing, whatever the hell it's called.
And we know about the Tasmanian hedgehog.
We know about the panda bear.
Oh, pandas are nice.
We know about all these things. We know about the Abert squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
We know about the black squirrels of Lindenwald.
We know a little bit about rabbits.
There are rabbits with long ears and short ears.
Yeah. There are rabbits in the woods, and there's rabbits in the jungle, and there's rabbits escaping from the laboratories where they test rabbits.
But there's one creature that science has not fully cataloged yet.
Oh, what's that?
There are two.
There's two.
There's three.
There's three.
The first creature the science has yet to find proof of existence is...
It was a Loch Ness Monster.
The Virgin Sorority Girl.
Oh, the Virgin Sorority Girl?
The second would be the Loch Ness Monster.
Okay, and the third would be...
The third is the topic of tonight's show.
Bigfoot! Now, Bigfoot is a big topic, and it takes more than one radio show to cover the breadth of topic that Bigfoot represents. But we are going to do our best on tonight's show.
Right.
And in about 30 seconds...
We're going to call the king of dongs.
No, we're not. In about 30 seconds, our producer Jim is going to call Chris Murphy. He's a Bigfoot specialist. But first, we're going to play you a brief tape that we recorded in October of 1997, in which Rob and I were interviewing George Clappison and Jody Cook, who were both Bigfoot researchers, and they played us a tape of Bigfoot.
Frightening.
Yeah, here's the tape of Bigfoot, and it's a field recording made of Bigfoot out in the woods somewhere. So here we go. Let's see if this works. Here, this is the sound that George gave us of a Bigfoot in the woods. You made a tape loop out of this, I take it.
Yes.
It sounds like dogs. I hear the dogs, but I also hear this, what's that?
Okay, this was an area that was staked out by a guy named Matt Moneymaker about 3 years ago. And what he would do is he would go out into the woods and set up parabolic microphones and infrared cameras in hopes of catching some of this. And he told me that you could sit on certain hillsides and hear these things calling to each other from the different ridges. And this is the sound he had given me.
It's just this one little bit loop. Okay, so this is what George Clappison and the other guy, Jody Cook, said was the sound of Bigfoot. Now, I still haven't been convinced that that's actually the sound of Bigfoot. I would think Bigfoot would go rawr or something, but that whoa out in the wilderness, I don't know. What do you think, Rob?
I think in Ohio, we sometimes refer to Bigfoot as the grass man. And if there is a grass man, then he would need a grass woman.
Well, Bigfoot goes by many different names, whether it's Sasquatch or Yeti or the Abominable Snowman or the Southern Ohio Grass Man or the Missouri Monster, also called the Momo. Or from Florida, they got the Florida Skunk Ape. But our next guest, Chris Murphy, is going to lay down the real deal on Bigfoot. According to Chris Murphy, he says the number of Bigfoot sightings has increased in the last 2 years, even though Bigfoot has been ignored by the mainstream media ever since the death of a hoaxer named Ray Wallace. Chris Murphy, can you hear me?
I can hear you all right, Chris.
All right, who is this hoaxer, Ray Wallace, and why have Bigfoot sightings been ignored by the mainstream media ever since this guy, Ray Wallace, died?
Well, let's put it, first of all, who was Ray Wallace? Well, he was a hoaxer himself, and he was just an old man who liked to play jokes on people.
Aha! Kind of like my grandpa.
For years.
All right.
He did silly things. He would tell the newspaper that he's offering $100,000 for a baby Bigfoot, and he wants to train it to ride around in his car, and he did all sorts of silly things that silly old men do. He was never a concern to the Bigfoot people or the Bigfoot fraternity. He was just a nuisance.
So he's like one of those guys that throws a Frisbee up in the air and takes a picture of it and tells all his friends it's a UFO from the Pleiades.
Exactly.
All right.
One of those kind of people. Now, unfortunately, the news media, and I'm going to use that very broadly, they love stuff like this. They love negative things like this. Because
well, they're biased.
Then they make hay out of it, you see.
Mm-hmm. The media is biased. We all know that.
Well, yes, because if they get a story like this, then they know they're going to get more readership. So away they go with it. Anything solidly positive, they put aside and look for negative stuff and just like to make stories.
And what was his big claim to fame? He did the famous video footage of the supposed Bigfoot.
He told people that he had 15,000 feet of video footage of Sasquatch. Of course he didn't. He just told everybody that. He told the newspapers that, and they printed it. He also told the Smithsonian Institution that he had all this footage, and John Napier even wrote it in his book. But he puts a little question mark saying, "Hey, he's never proven it." He's just one of those guys that makes a nuisance of himself with hoaxes.
And so we don't need to concern ourselves with him anymore. Now tell us about some of the work you're doing, Chris.
Well, okay, answer to your second question about sightings, first of all, I would say that sightings have increased in the last 10 years, really, because of our communications have increased so dramatically with email, specifically. Prior to email, we didn't hear very much. Now you've got email. People can actually tell you something for nothing. They don't have to phone you and pay a long-distance bill. They don't have to send you a letter and pay postage. They can go on the Internet. So there's been far more sightings reported because of communication.
Well, speaking of communications, Chris, do you care if we open up line two in case anyone either has a question about Bigfoot or a Bigfoot sighting to report?
Absolutely not.
All right, let's open up line two. The phone number is 961-8900. If you're out of state, that's 513-961-8900. Now, I don't want any jokesters calling saying that their grandpa is Bigfoot or anything, but if you've seen a Bigfoot, or if you know someone who's seen a Bigfoot and it's fairly legitimate, or if you have a pretty good question to ask our guest, Chris Murphy, about his research into Bigfoot sightings, give us a call at 513-961-8900. Lines are open now.
Mr. Murphy, let's define our terms. First of all, do you refer to, is there one Bigfoot inhabiting North America, or do you believe there are a bunch, perhaps different herds or tribes or a gaggle or a murder of Bigfoots
there,
running around?
There are a lot, enough to sustain a population. Let's put it that way.
So it's not
about
a Bigfoot.
About the same as rare animals. Let's talk like the wolverine, which is bordering extinct. There are still many of them. They are still seen, and they're still just maintaining enough, right, to have a population. And that's what I believe the Sasquatch is. Now, a lot of people disagree with this because of the number of sightings, but I believe there are enough to sustain a population.
Now, can a scientist in Michigan go out in the woods and within a day or two find a wolverine if they wanted to?
Very, very difficult. And to try and find a wolverine's bones would be even more difficult. To try and find a cougar's bones would be very, very difficult, too. You don't find bones out there.
Well, I was going to ask you, Chris, about bones, because common sense would tell you if there was a Bigfoot and if he died, you would either find his bones or his remains scattered about somewhere. Even if like some vulture or some wolf came by and started eating on him, you'd still find some bones or some remnants there,
no.
Wouldn't you?
No, you'll never find any bones. You go out in the woods, you won't find bones. You won't find bones of anything. You'll find antlers of deer and things like that. Very, very seldom will you find bones. If you could find a cougar's skull, you could make a few bucks, right? Because people like to have something like that. Even bears, you don't find a skull. You don't find any bones. They go very, very fast.
Is it because of the moisture? And
well, because other animals eat them, and within a few weeks, they're gone. They're just gone. You ask any hunter how many bones he finds out in the woods. Very, very slow. Matter of fact, you don't even see animals out in the woods. Very few. I mean, DeHinden told me 40 years in the bush, he saw one cougar. One cougar.
Well, I thought maybe if you couldn't find a Bigfoot's bones, maybe Bigfoot buried his dead.
That's a possibility, but even if he buried his dead, you would certainly find some bones as well, or there should be some diggings where you'd find bones.
Yeah.
The only reason we have bones of all these prehistoric animals, of dinosaurs and all the rest of it, is that they died in certain areas where their bones got preserved by the earth in that particular area. And unfortunately, we've not uncovered a Sasquatch that apparently got stuck in that kind of a quagmire or whatever it was that preserved the bones.
Okay. Hey, this is the Chris and Rob Show on WAIF. Our guest is Chris Murphy. He's a Bigfoot and Sasquatch researcher, and we have a whole bunch of questions for him. He wrote a book called Meet the Sasquatch. Is that a good book?
Well, that's a great book, and I want to tell your listeners that there's also an exhibit at the Vancouver Museum on the Sasquatch, which I put together, and the book basically accompanies that exhibit at the museum, Vancouver, British Columbia. So if you're up this way and you're interested in Sasquatch, never before have all of these artifacts come together.
Wow.
They're at the Vancouver, British Columbia Museum. It's a city museum, a planetarium complex, and the whole exhibit room is full of material that I have collected up over the last couple of years from all of the major Bigfoot Sasquatch researchers.
Okay. Hey, Chris, we've already got some phone calls rolling in from the listeners, so let's start with Andy on line one. Hello, Andy. You're on the air with Chris Murphy.
Hey, how's it going tonight, guys?
Fine. What's on your mind, Andy?
Well, I had two questions I wanted to ask. The first one was how many, if any, sightings have there been in kind of the central Indiana area? Maybe near, if you know, the area of Friendship, Indiana. And what kind of a threat, if any, does the questionable creature offer man? if you were camping or doing anything in the, in, you know, a unpopulated wooded area.
Right. Mr. Murphy, in case
I got both questions here. Okay, first of all, you asked me about sightings, and you wanted to talk about Indiana?
Central Indiana.
Indiana is I-N, right?
Right.
Yes.
Well, I have reported in my records about 30 sightings, okay? Now, that would cover the last 50 to 100 years. Don't forget, not too many sightings prior to 50 years ago, okay? But I have 30 sightings here for Indiana. Now, John Green probably has a few more in his database, but that's how many I have registered in Indiana. On your second question, you asked about, are Bigfoot dangerous? Is that basically the question?
Correct.
Right.
No. 99.999% of the time, the Bigfoot creature observes somebody who's observing it, and it simply stands there, looks at them, turns around, and walks away. Now, that has happened time and time again. Now, there have been some instances where it is alleged, that this creature actually harmed some people. Now, the first indication or the first major report was by Theodore Roosevelt, believe it or
really?
Not, the president
Uncle Ted,
who became
huh?
president of the United States. He was hunting before he became president in the Bitterroot Mountains in Idaho-Montana border, and he was told a story by a man by the name of Bauman, who apparently was a trapper, and his friend or trapping partner was killed by some creature that raided the camp and walked on two big feet.
Wow.
Now, he Roosevelt told this story in his book, which is called Wilderness Hunter, right? Wilderness Hunter by Theodore Roosevelt, and you can get it at most libraries. And there's a long dissertation, and Theodore apparently really believed Bauman because he printed the story exactly as Bauman had told him. And it's quite a spine chiller kind of thing. It really goes through all the motions of in the bush, and this happened and that happened, and then his friend was all ripped apart by apparently some kind of a creature that walked on two big human-like feet, and it wasn't a human, right? Now, other than that, there have been a few abductions, mostly of First Nations people. Down in the States, we call them Indians. Here, we call them First Nations people. Indian or First Nations people, usually women, right? There's been a couple of those. The only one up here was one that took place on the Chehalis Indian Reservation, which is about, an hour from Vancouver. And the woman was abducted by a Sasquatch, claimed she was, told her story. She was released after a year.
The Bigfoot kept her for a year?
Yes, it did. Yeah, yeah.
Man, doesn't
he? And she had a baby by it, but it died, apparently, and she buried it.
Wow.
She did not want it known. Now, this is the story that was told by a fellow by the name of John W. Burns, who was a teacher for the Chehalis people from 1925 until 1945, I think it was, or 41. And he researched the Sasquatch on the Chehalis Reservation and talked about all of their sightings. You know, there's still sightings on the Chehalis Reservation. You know, I called the chief up there, and he tells me, yes, it was two last year, so many the year before, this kind of thing.
We're speaking with Chris Murphy, Bigfoot Sasquatch expert from Vancouver, 961-8900. This is WAIF. Chris and Rob. So, Mr. Murphy, would you say that humans and Bigfoot were part of the same genealogical tree going back millions of years ago, and that humans took one branch and Bigfoot took the other branch, or are we really not all that closely related?
Well, I don't know. I'd hate to speculate on that question. There are two schools of thought, basically. One of them is that the Bigfoot or the Sasquatch is a relative of the Gigantopithecus, which is a large ape-like creature that lived in Asia. Now, it wandered across the Bering Strait when the Bering Strait was a land bridge.
Just like the Eskimos did and the Indians.
Yeah, they did too. All sorts of people transmigrated into North America and even down into South America. Now, some of these things came in here, we speculate, and then the Bering Strait closed up and you couldn't get out of North America unless you had a boat. Right? You were stuck on this continent. Now, the creatures in Asia apparently died off in that part of the world, but over here in North America, For some reason, they didn't die off, and they evolved into what? Or maybe they didn't evolve. They evolved into the Sasquatch or Bigfoot creature. Now, that is the main theory. That is the main theory as to what these creatures are.
But don't you have a Yeti in the Himalayas?
You have a Yeti in the Himalayas as well. Yes, you do, which is probably... They're not as big as Sasquatch now.
And I saw...
Don't get them mixed up. They're not that big. They're not like the Sasquatch. They're much lighter built and smaller. Much smaller. We think they are possibly related, just like human beings and other races of people, right? I mean, we are related to pygmies. Let's face it, pygmies are human beings, correct?
Uh-huh.
But they are different. They're very small. So perhaps the Sasquatch and also the Russian snowman, the Almas, or the Kaptar, as they call it, and the Yeti are all species or subspecies of Bigfoot.
Well, let's talk about all the species real quick. What about Florida skunk ape and a Missouri monster?
That's right. I believe they're all in the Bigfoot realm.
Well,
skunk ape as well.
Well, let me ask you kind of a silly question, considering the conversation we've had so far, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Do you yourself, honestly in your heart, believe that there is such a creature as the Bigfoot that walks on this earth among us at the present time, or do you believe that these sightings are figments of the imagination or hoaxes or some other phenomena?
I don't believe they are figments of the imagination or hoaxes. Excuse me. There are too many credible people coming up with sightings. I mean, we've got doctors, lawyers, policemen, and very credible people that come forward and say, look, this is what I saw. I mean, just the other day, a person came up to me in the home. My father's in a home. She heard that I wrote the book. She's the, education or the crafts director for the home. He's an old age home. She's a very educated person, and she came up to me and told me that she and a group of other people the other year were up on a place called Bowen Island, which is not a very big island, up in the Gulf over here, and she said, we saw a Sasquatch standing on the trail. It looked at us, and it walked away. Definitely, it wasn't a bear. I mean, these people are all very, very credible, and so I do believe that they are seeing something. I can't explain otherwise what all these footprints are that we have. If you come to the museum, you will see the cast that I have, a very fine collection of footprint casts that have been sent to me by various people, John Green mainly, and others, okay, down from California, even as far back, as Ohio. And I heard you talking previously about Ohio, and I'm having another book coming out next summer, which is Quest for the Grassman, Bigfoot in Ohio. We're updating that book.
Okay.
I worked with George Clappison and George and Jody Cook on the first book back in 97, and we're updating it.
Yeah, that was,
there's an awful lot of stuff in Ohio.
That was their tape we were playing when we first started talking
That's
to you.
Right. That's
tape
right.
Yeah, have you heard the tape of George Clappison and Jody Cook?
I've worked with them, yes, on the first book, Bigfoot in Ohio, and I'm redoing it now, and as I say, it'll be out next summer.
What do you think about their tape recording that they say is a Bigfoot howling in the woods?
Well, there are other tape recordings, and some of them sound similar, and some of them don't. I have recordings going at the museum that were taken down in the Sierras in California, and Alan Best and Ron Moorhead took these tapes, and they sort of the creature kind of chattering. And they have been subjected to all sorts of high-profile tests by scientists. A lot of money has been spent on them. And they are declared that human beings could not make those noises. They're beyond the range of human voices. And they are not electronically produced. In other words, they're not made by some kind of an instrument. And this is according to these professionals. I mean, I'm not doing it. They're telling us this.
Okay.
So there are some of the sounds. I don't know about the stuff from Ohio, just how much has been spent, having it analyzed. But I do know the ones from California have been professionally analyzed, and they are coming clean. They're saying it's not human beings, and it's not any other animal.
Okay. What's the name of the Ohio Bigfoot book?
It's going to be Quest for the Grassman. That's the current title, Bigfoot in Ohio.
All right, well, we want to have you back on when that book comes out.
Yeah, that'll be out in the summer. It's actually just in the, it's just finished, as a matter of fact. I've been working the last year. A week before it was Bigfoot in Ohio, Encounters with the Grassman. That was in 1997. And since that time, Jody has sent me, and also George, a lot of other material. So I've updated it and added a lot of new stuff in the last 6 years or so. And so it's bigger and better and the whole bit. Well, Ohio is a main area for Bigfoot sightings. Definitely, absolutely. And very credible material comes out of Ohio.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you about some of these Ohio sightings, but first let's remind our listeners that we're talking to Chris Murphy, a Bigfoot investigator from, where are you from, Chris?
I'm from Burnaby, British Columbia, which is just outside of Vancouver.
Oh, so you're Canadian, eh?
I'm a Canadian, yes,
Take
sir.
Off. All right, if you'd like to call in and talk to our Canadian Bigfoot researcher, the phone number here is 513-961-8900. Andy called a moment ago, and you can call next at 513-961-8900.
Let's get down some more what we consider details of the Grassman, the Bigfoot, the Sasquatch. You said, like, the Yeti's not as big as the Bigfoot. That brings up the natural question. What is the height and weight, do you suppose, that the Bigfoot is?
Well, Dr. Henner Fahrenbach has done a ton of study on this, taking all the sightings where we have somebody estimating the heights and all the rest of it, and also foot sizes, and he's coming out with somewhere around 8 feet tall, okay?
Okay.
And somewhere around 600, 700 pounds, actually.
And yeah, what size sneaker would they wear?
Confirm this, okay? He's got, in my book, Meet the Sasquatch, I present all of Dr. Fahrenbach's charts and graphs on the Sasquatch. And he shows, for instance, you know, how the step length, the gait, the foot height relationship, height, et cetera, et cetera. In his distribution, he comes with 8 feet, 2.4 meters high, is apparently what he's coming up with is the height of the creatures. And as far as the weight goes, in looking at the creature that was in the Patterson-Gimlin film, he comes up with 542 pounds or 245.5 kilograms for that particular creature.
The Patterson film, is that, didn't that not come out as a hoax or not?
No, that's this fellow. You know, everybody says they're the man in the suit. I mean, you know, the line starts on the right. Now the latest fellow is this fellow, Greg Long, who writes that Bob Hieronymus was the man in the suit. But Bob Gimlin, who was there, swears, and I've been together with Bob Gimlin. I've talked to him. I went to Willow Creek with him, and we've done many interviews with Bob, and Bob says, no, this is just one big pile of BS, right? That he was at that site. He was with Patterson, and what he saw was a natural creature. And there's a million errors in Long's book, all sorts of things that he's saying that just don't make sense, at all. And so, you know, we as the Bigfoot fraternity have kind of said, okay, that's it. That's just another nuisance, right?
Right.
Another claim. There is no truth to the stuff that Long is putting out. Now, matter of fact, I'll tell you, I looked into a lot of that stuff years ago, right? And I found out things, and I thought, well, you know, people were telling me stuff, but I could never prove it. And as I say, Greg Long does not come up with one scrap of solid evidence. All he's got is hearsay. All he's got is what people are telling him, right? Testimony. And testimony is not worth the powder to blow it to hell when you're talking about something like this. You've got to have hard facts. He has nothing. I came up, or I had a lot of that testimony told me years ago, and I didn't publish anything on it because I felt badly because, you know, if you're going to say that Roger Patterson was a liar and he was a cheat and he did this and he did that, and that you don't have any proof, all you've got is what people are telling you, then I don't think you should say that. You should have proof before you go out and defame a certain person. He spends that entire book calling down Roger Patterson. Now, I will admit that Roger Patterson probably was no saint. He ran up a few bucks. Now, I think his total debt, by today's standards, is absolutely nothing. It was about $2,000. I mean, in those days it was a bit of money, but really not that much. 1967 was not the deep, dark ages, okay? And he has, you know, he's sort of claims that Roger Patterson was, you know, the worst, world's worst faker. He was this, he was that. And it's not right. He shouldn't have done that. It's defaming this person. Yes, he had his faults. But that had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that he went out into the forest and took a 16-millimeter movie film of what appears to be a Bigfoot creature.
There you go.
What has it got to do with that?
Right. Well, we're not here to talk about Greg Long. We're here to talk about Chris Murphy and your studies of Bigfoot.
Right.
And you have a voluminous collection of Bigfoot evidence on display at the Vancouver, British Columbia Museum. In your collection, speaking of BS, do you have any Bigfoot scat?
Which is another word for droppings.
Well, you know, I didn't. I do, but I didn't put it in there because I get so much adverse and so many people make so much fun of this kind of thing. But I have seen it. I've smelt it. We had some down in Sweet Home the other month. I was down there. And it doesn't smell like human scat. It smells totally different. And it is much larger than human scat, okay? It is distinctively larger. When this thing has a normal movement, right, normal then movement. It comes out much, much larger. Larger
movement.
Than a bear, larger than a very large person. I've seen pictures of it.
You know, Chris, we're laughing about it a little bit because you got to laugh when you talk about poop. But
yeah.
But explain to our audience the value of a stool sample from any animal, especially an animal as mysterious as the Sasquatch and Bigfoot.
Well, if you get the stool sample, you can analyze it and see what's in it. Now, you can't get DNA from it because it's eaten all sorts of things that had DNA, and you're going to end up with DNA of whatever it ate. Now, I'll tell you a couple of unusual things. In Ohio, they found scat up on tree branches, okay, like high up. Now, cows and bears don't go up trees and poop down, okay?
Not generally.
Whatever it did went up a tree, and they found the scat on branches that were about 12 feet up, right? So they had it analyzed, and they found that it contained wood fiber and animal and rodent hair and things like that, okay? And they said, well, what do you think it is to the scientists? And they said, well, we think it's human. And they said, well, what's a human being doing eating wood fiber? I think it's cambium or whatever it is from the bark of trees. What's a human being doing eating the stuff that's in this scat? But it does appear like human being scat, but it's not the same. As I say, the quantity of it is enormous.
Like
much
how big?
More than a human being.
Like how big are we talking?
Oh gosh, it's like half a bucket. You know, it's a lot, and it's a long coil. Much, I mean, you know, you've heard about this kind of, and as they say, it's laughable, you know. As they say,
you're the
you know,
one that used the word coil.
It's twice around the bowl and pointed at both ends, you know. That's a good one.
Oh, my God. So where was Bigfoot at my last fraternity party?
But
he'd have been the
Russia,
life of the party with a turd like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's big, and mm-hmm. it's coiled. It's like a snake, you know. Much more than a human being couldn't do that.
Let's remind our listeners that if they'd like to call in and talk about Bigfoot, Chris Murphy is our guest from Vancouver, British Columbia. The phone number is 513-961-8900. That's 961-8900. Chris Murphy is the author of the new book, Meet the Sasquatch, and a book that will be coming out next year called Quest for the Grassman, Bigfoot in Ohio. And we're going to go to the phone now and say hello to John from Cheviot. Hello, John. You're on the air with Bigfoot hunter Chris Murphy.
All right. Chris and Rob, it's been a while since I talked to you guys, and this was the perfect time for me to call because I had something nagging in the back of my head about the Bigfoot for a while now, and here you go.
Okay.
I remember back in the 70s, I saw some show on TV, and I was drinking back then, so my memory's not real clear. But I remember seeing some show about the Bigfoot, and that I think it was going to say that it was actually aliens came down and named the Bigfoot Sasquatch.
Huh?
Do you know about that?
Chris
well,
Murphy
that
would...
wouldn't be true because the name Sasquatch was made up by John W. Burns, who was a teacher on the Chehalis Indian Reservation in British Columbia, and he made that name up in about 1925. It is sort of it's an Anglicanized Indian word, and he actually started the name Sasquatch, so that had absolutely nothing to do with UFOs or aliens, John.
Well, they could have had aliens back in the 20s, though, you know.
I don't think that our guest Chris buys into the whole aliens brought Bigfoot here theory. Is that safe to assume, Chris?
I think you're very safe there, yes,
well,
Chris.
I
don't buy into
that,
it.
I don't know. I just remembered seeing this show in the 70s. And it had the Bigfoot. I think it was Andre the Giant.
Well, John from Cheviot, I recall some of the calls you've made to our program in the last couple of years. And I don't know why you haven't asked this question to our guests, but I'll ask them. Some people say when you're in the wild and you see a Bigfoot, you should either A, take a picture of him, B, try to capture him alive, so that you can show them to a scientist or a biologist, or C, that you should shoot them. Now, where do you stand on the whole subject of if you see a Bigfoot, you should shoot it?
No, no, no. We don't advocate that at all. And there's been a lot of controversy over that. What I do advocate is please carry a camera. If you're going out into the bush, take a camera with you. If you see a Bigfoot or that, just compose yourself and try and get a photograph. So many people have cameras and they don't get a shot because they get too excited and they forget. It's very hard to get a photograph of an animal, very, very hard, especially one that's just sort of fleeting or standing by the side of the road or running in front of you, because by the time you get your camera out, it's gone.
Okay.
So the thing is, be prepared. Don't shoot it. Don't try to capture it. Just stand there and see if you can get a photograph.
All right. Thanks for your call, John from Cheviot. And anyone else that would like to call in, the phone number is 961-8900. That's 513-961-8900. And, Chris, I'm surprised more and more and more photographs haven't surfaced, because I remember when I was a kid and people had cameras, but not everybody had a camera all the time. Nowadays, people got cameras in their cell phones and people got digital cameras, and people got digital cameras like they got Walkmans in the 80s.
That is true.
So I'm surprised more people don't get photographs if indeed this Bigfoot does exist and is roaming in the wild.
It is a little bit of a mystery, and it's not, because I have gone out and I have cameras with me all the time, and I have seen things, animals that I want to get a picture of, and I have been unsuccessful in getting pictures of those animals because they go too darn fast. By the time I get the camera out, by the time I get it focused, it's gone. So Chris, it is difficult.
Chris, have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No, I haven't. I have just talked to people who have. I've been out looking, and I think your best bet, if you look at all the sightings of seeing a Sasquatch, are going to be one on the side of the road, probably at night.
Okay.
Now, I do driving. I do a lot of driving in the summertime up into, you know, the mountains and all through Alberta and Banff and all that area where there are sightings. And on nice summer days, I love to drive all those great roads looking for the creature, hoping that one will pop out. And I have my camera ready every time, but I've not yet seen one. No.
Okay. Do we think Bigfoot hibernates?
We don't really. No, we think it kind of moves down, moves south, comes north and moves south. Well, that's my opinion is, okay, that it does come up north, just like the birds, when the food is plentiful, and then it spreads south. Now, somebody mentioned to me something very interesting the other day on that, and that is that under the new rules where they have a satellite and they're looking at the border between the United States and Canada, and they now got these, telescopes or whatever, looking at the entire border to seeing if there are anybody crossing it, right?
Right.
And there is a possibility, we're hoping, that high technology is going to start indicating something going across that border, which could possibly be a Sasquatch.
You don't think the government would actually release it, do you?
Well, I don't know. I'm hoping they
would. Maybe the Canadian government would, but the U.S. government certainly
would.
Well,
the U.S. government probably wouldn't know. But anyway, it's half-half, right? But we do think that there's a possibility that this surveillance equipment, which is now going in place to keep, with all this security now, is a possibility that we're going to start noticing something running back and forth across the border. Mm.
Yeah. All right, Chris, let's go back to the phones. Again, our guest is Chris Murphy, Bigfoot researcher from Vancouver, B.C. And the phone number here at the Chris and Rob Show is 961-8900. You're listening to WAIF. Hello, Chris. I'm Chris, and you're on the air with Chris.
Well, we got three going, right?
Yeah, all right.
What's on your mind, Chris, the caller?
Well, I was curious to know if you've collaborated with Reinhold Messner, the climber, the alpinist, because he's writing a book now called In Search of the Yeti. You know, he's over in the Himalaya, and he's looking for the Yeti, which is, as we know in North America, Sasquatch, a.k.a. Bigfoot. I'll just hang up and let you comment on that.
Hold on a second, Chris, the caller. Is Reinhold Messner the guy that our friend Ben Folds did the record about?
The name, yes, but the whole.
Yeah, but it's right now.
Reinhold Messner on that was actually one of his friends at college had a fake ID, and the name on it was Reinhold Messner. And then he found out later in life that Reinhold Messner is the famous alpinist.
Right. Well, I knew he didn't actually write a book about a mountain or a record about a mountain climber. I was just wondering if it's the same guy. All right, Chris, hang up and you can listen to his reply. Chris Murphy from Vancouver, British Columbia, Bigfoot expert. Have you ever worked with the famous alpinist Reinhold Messner?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't got involved with the Yeti that much. I do keep up to date as much as I can, and I have written in my book the latest information that we have on the DNA that was obtained from Bhutan of what is supposed to be, or which they claim to be, a Yeti. I think you heard about this.
Right.
These were the British scientists that went in there, and the thing apparently slept in this hollow tree, and they collected hairs. Apparently, it kind of bent down as it got inside this tree, and it scraped its back. And they have collected hairs, took them back, and a doctor, Brian Sykes in Britain, declared that he got DNA, which he could not identify. And it says that he'd never seen anything like this in all his life. And apparently, this is some indication that the Yeti is, in fact, reality. That is the latest that I know of any substance regarding the Yeti. I don't get involved in it that much.
Well, Chris Murphy, we spoke earlier about the BS, the Bigfoot scat. Let's go to the other end. From the scat and from other observations, what do you believe the Bigfoot eats on a daily basis?
There are many, many, many things it can eat, especially up here in British Columbia and California. Now, I have talked to a naturalist at the British Columbia Provincial Museum by the name of Frank Beebe, who has declared to me that the Sasquatch would have absolutely no trouble finding enough food in British Columbia's forests to exist. As a matter of fact, he says there are other animals that shouldn't exist because they have less access to food than what the Sasquatch does, like the Arctic bear. This is something that only has like 4 months to feed, and it's got to survive the rest of the year on what it can find in those 4 months. The Sasquatch has tons to eat. Now, I got a remark here because they had a naturalist on the television just the other week taking a walk in the woods. And as he walked through the woods, he looked down and he said, "You see those?" And there's these big, black, ugly slugs sitting on the trail, right? He picked one up, popped it in his mouth, and he said, "These are exceedingly nutritious. Believe me, they're fine. They taste great." And he ate them. So these great, big, black slugs that you see up in the mountains, they are quite edible, and they provide a lot of protein. On the beaches, there are tons of clams. There are roots. There are all sorts of things that these creatures could eat. We seem to think that they possibly do catch and kill deer. There have been a number of sightings where it is seen that the creature is carrying a deer or deer parts. This is particularly prevalent in Ohio. There's been a lot of sightings because a lot of deer in Ohio.
We got a lot of deer in Ohio.
And it is particularly seen. There have been bow hunters who have been tracking deer and have seen them running and then observed a Sasquatch or Bigfoot down the States actually stalking the deer. And they think maybe they'll talk to one another. There'll be one chasing the deer and there'll be one up further ahead. And perhaps as the deer race by, they run out and club them or do whatever. But they do seem to catch deer. Now, fish are another big thing. Time and time again, we hear of Sasquatch in the rivers catching fish. They bend over, and when they bend over, they look like a bear. And that's what most people think they are. And if they stand and watch, it stands up and walks out on 2 feet. That's what distinguishes it from a bear, because bears don't usually walk very far on 2 feet. So there are some items. Now, other things they eat, believe it or not, is garbage. They have been seen at garbage dumps. They are also seen at campsites going through, you know, garbage areas in camping areas.